All right. So can you actually express the value of your offering as an MSP if the client you're talking to doesn't actually have a clear strategy? That's one of the things I want to talk about today. Also, I want to talk about defining what you should build in terms of software. If you've got a development team or software engineers, how do you determine what's a good fit with your client base and whether or not it's actually landing as intended? Let's throw some cool music in and kick off from there. So welcome to Insights as a Service, the podcast that helps MSPs get ahead. G'day, Nick. Thanks for joining me once again.
Thank you.
You're high energy. You've had the COVID. You feeling all right? Well, we think you've had the COVID, right?
We think I have the COVID. Still tested negative, so it's annoying. Another one to do after this. But fingers crossed it's not. But definitely battling something.
Well, I'm seeing you in a couple of days, so please don't give me the COVID.
Sharing is caring.
Is it though? But yeah, look, I just came from a lunch that would have definitely escalated if I had allowed it to. I didn't quite read the room on the invite. Didn't realize it was a sort of a 12:30 till 8 p.m. kind of a situation. But I've left our colleague Jack there kicking on. But it was really interesting, actually. It was a chat with a company that we don't currently work with, but is an MSP. And one of the things that came up was just when you're trying to position your service as an MSP, don't mind me, I'm just putting back on my aura ring to make sure that all my vitals are tracked. But that's for anyone watching this on the video version. They will see that I have this thing on. Anywho, so when you're trying to qualify a client, when you're trying to make sure the client sees the money they will spend on the IT solution that you're presenting as an investment or something that enables them to grow and to reach their strategic aims, can you effectively do that if the client themselves doesn't have a clear growth strategy? If they don't have whether it's a big, hairy, audacious goal, the BHAG, or whether it's just simply a 3 to 5 year growth plan with a dollar sign on the end of it, if they haven't put some structure around how they'll actually reach that number, you know, we'll grow into this market, our sales force and our team will be this size. How do you, if they haven't identified how technology can help them achieve their aims, and to do that, you have to actually have a client or a prospect that has an aim. How do you turn an investment or a cost into an investment?
That's a great question.
Thanks, I thought of it just then.
Very long-winded.
Yeah, sorry, I do that.
Yeah, we break it down a bit though. You know, I think part of it is if that client doesn't understand, they don't have that goal, that vision, then really the only way you're going to be able to sell to them or help them come up with some kind of way to integrate their product set with yours is to get them buying into either A, the person that they're dealing with, like it's going to be someone decent to work with, or B, you get them so excited that they just want to work with you because you're a cool company and they can see that, you know, they'll have some success by working with you because others have.
So I got another thing there too. I think if you've got a consultancy arm to your MSP, that can take a company that doesn't quite have a strategy, they can actually go, you know what, whether it's just a, you know, digital transformation strategy, but actually more than that, something that goes, how do you use technology to grow your business? Have you actually thought about where your business is going to go? If you haven't got a clear trajectory over 3 to 5 years, well, let's help you identify that. And then let's figure out where technology fits into that. So it's almost a business consultancy piece off the back of an IT engagement. Now, you've still got to have people who are receptive to that. Some people say, I don't need you to tell me how to run my business. But if you can have that conversation, if you can almost guide them down a path that says, let's actually help you create that outlook, create that strategic growth plan, and then let's figure out where we can actually help you achieve that with the technology offering we have. I don't know, that there's something in that for me that
Yeah, that's immensely powerful. And there's a lot of MSPs out there that do that for their clients. You know, it's not about necessarily even selling them their product sets. It's about going in there and going, what are you doing for accounting? What are you doing across procurement? What are you doing across XYZ? And they just look at them from a technology perspective and go, how can technology improve your business? And then throughout that go, okay, we know, you know, if we implement this technology into your production system, you could output this much more product, and therefore that might drive some more metrics for them, set some KPIs, set some goals for that company to help, you know, grow their business. there's certainly a few MSPs in Australia doing that. I don't know about NZ. I'm sure there's one or two floating around that goes into that kind of wider application stack depth.
It comes back to that qualifying piece too, right? So you've got certain customers who are going to understand your value premium, the proposition, and others who won't. And then you need to determine how hard you want to work to explain to them why they should care about what you can do for them. But yeah, I think it just comes back to a meeting of minds in many cases. Are the people you're talking to sophisticated? Are they aware of where they're going, where they want to go? And are they open to ideas as to how they can achieve that faster at a lower cost or at the same cost with a greater return, whatever. But yeah, it really comes back to that qualification piece. So yeah, this conversation was just very interesting because it was a particular firm that does have a consultancy arm that does funnel a lot of business to their MSP arm. So that they can, you know, because those consultants are having that discussion. So yeah, to your point, there's certainly at least this one plus some others in Australia having that conversation, although this particular one was quite, I think quite public sector based. Can't be 100% on that. A lot of eating and small talk, but that's okay. Yeah. Okay.
It comes back to that making your customers sticky, right? Like, sure, they refer a lot of business probably across to their MSP arm as well. But likewise, I'm sure the MSP arm flicks a lot back and going, how can we do more with you? That's really about protecting their moat.
Yeah. Another part of that conversation was actually, I still think there's a lot of power in saying no to people. If people are just looking for break fix, whether or not they're worth continuing to work with, or do you really look for those who you can get excited about working with them, go on a journey with them, really build a success story off the back of the technological transformation you take them through.
The break fix model is great for small businesses that don't want to commit to anything, you know. But I think if you want real value out of that technology relationship, they need to become ingrained in your business. They need to work with you as a partner, like a proper partner. Because without that, you know, you can't align your strategy with their offerings and what they're doing from a product and you know, supply perspective.
Fair. All right. Well, let's park that and let's talk about software spend. So, this is something you and I've been talking about as well, but I think it applies to any business that has the ability to create software to meet customer demand, whether it's Dynamics or whether it's your own portal or whatever the hell it is. The question is always, you've got a finite amount of time, and software engineers typically or developers are quite expensive. So you want to make sure that whatever you're taking up their time doing, that you understand the problem you're solving for your customers, that it's perceived as the resolution or the solving of that problem holds high value. And then once it's put in place, you want to be able to make sure that it's being used as intended, that there aren't any easy wins to make it even more effective. What else have I written down here? Oh yeah, do the features limit churn? Do they grow revenue? Exactly what are the outcomes for the business? So when we think about the first part of that puzzle, which is, okay, you're going to build something. How do you determine what it is you'll build? What's your go-to approach there? How do you determine what's actually of interest to your client base?
Obvious one is to go out and ask them, right?
Yeah, it's important.
Don't just assume that you have a cool idea and everyone's going to love that, because we've definitely been guilty of doing that in the past ourselves.
You
build it and no one uses it, right? Or it has a limited number of use cases rather than what you thought it was going to be. So you know, you got to get out there. You got to ask the customers. You got to do that research. You got to look out there. Go, what's the competition doing? Could I do that better? If the competition is doing it, are people actually using it? Is there a value that the customer sees in that?
So
I want those customers that need
that? What forum do you ask that question in? What format? Formats?
Formats, many. You could do it through the traditional survey if you've got a good client base and you know, MailChimp, SurveyMonkey, bunch of those other ones there. You could build up some really good qualitative questions to go to your customers and then kind of poll them on that. That's probably the easiest one for a lot of tech types who don't like having actual face-to-face interactions with customers. Then there's the obvious one is, you know, have an advisory board or go to your biggest customers. Go, what can I do to you know, make your life easier, integrate more, that kind of thing. You could formalize that as well, turn it into an advisory board down the road, ongoing, continue refinement and development of that product set, or that feature that you've built for that customer, that integration. And then beyond that, you know, it says, if you're, you know, a behemoth, it's that kind of suggest a feature. Put it on your website, you know, or
throw it up, throw portal down.
Or list it all in there and let kind of the public drive your roadmap to development.
Yeah. And I think if you can get your dev team or your software engineers in those meetings that you've outlined there, and your counterpart, your client, have their equivalent people take part in that meeting as well, I think you get a really more ingrained relationship. And then if you can get, whether it's exposing certain APIs, certain endpoints via API, so that your customers end up integrating their customer facing, you know, features, tools, products with yours, the churn reduction is going to be huge, right? It gets so much harder to extricate themselves from you.
Yeah, the more you're integrated, the tighter it is. Hopefully the better that relationship becomes. But yeah, to get out of it is a massive amount of work. I was just thinking then, you know, is actually having the right people in the room as well. If you've got someone sitting in a meeting with someone, you're talking about what can we do, feature sets, product sets. You get someone in there who's got a fairly good understanding. But if you took in someone from that development team that was kind of either responsible for that development team, like we've got Daryl in our team, and he's really good at this, but he understands the product set and the functionality and skill sets of his team so well that he can sit in there and go, oh, that's easy. That's like half an hour's work. Like, or no, like no way we can do that. Not this year. Like he kind of knows where things are at. And if you want to turn something really quick around for your customer, give them that integration off the bat, then that's the best way to find out whether you can actually do it, rather than kind of have a more formal reporting cycle, analyze it, feed it back to the development team, do a priorities list, go back to the customer. Give them it's coming.
Yeah.
Q4 2028.
Yeah. That's the hardest thing, I suppose, when you have those meetings and you go, yeah, we'll add that to the pipeline. And then the pipeline ends up being this 3-year monster. And oh, yeah, it's coming. Oh, next quarter. Oh, it's definitely on our roadmap.
Drops off.
Quarter. Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah.
Then it becomes irrelevant because there's some other option or problem that's become, more prevalent. But okay, let's say that you then build something for your clients, for your customers. They have access to this. How do we then gauge whether or not we've actually got the return on what we thought was going to be the case? So I suppose the first thing I'd say is I'm a huge believer, as we always say, bullets think cannonballs. You know, test small, limited range, maybe limited release, and then iterate and go big if you see what you expected to see, if you're providing the value you hope to see. But how do you determine whether you are seeing the return or the customer experience or the uplifting customer experience that you hope to?
Look, that starts right from the beta, right? It's getting someone on board, using it as you develop it. You know, is it being laid out properly? Have you developed it to the sense that they will actually use it and then refine it from there, you know, through that bug fixing process? Then actually do a bit of a marketing campaign around it and, you know, tell your customers or your users or whoever that, you know, we have this new product feature now. This is the problem it solves. This is why you should care. Boom. And then because you had a smart development team, they've built in some kind of analytical tracking measures throughout this. They've got Hotjar or something in there. They can see that live usage pattern. They can see what people are engaging with, whether they're getting views in those daily metrics around it. And from then you can go, was this successful, you know, and then you can tie that back to outcomes.
Yeah.
As your product delivery faster? Do you have more sales? Like what was the reason for building this tool?
Yeah. And some of those won't be immediately apparent, right? Like you can't just go, oh, churn's dropped off. It's been 1 month. Yeah. Like it doesn't work that way, but over time you certainly will. But I think you touched on something interesting there. One is your marketing initiatives. If what you've developed really holds value, if you're marketing off the back of that, even some of those sort of vanity metrics, your click-through rates, you know, your engagement online, those should be at a higher level than what you've seen from previous features, if you're really nailing it. If not, then either you're targeting the wrong people with your outbound campaigns or with your AdWords, and maybe you know, you need to rejig that. But also those analytics you mentioned, it's not just who's actually clicking and viewing, it's how they're using it. What is that customer experience? And I think that's often part of it. It's not just can the feature do what the feature needs to do, it's how intuitive is it? How much of a pleasure is it to use? And I think that's sometimes a disconnect in that conversation as well, is not just what do you actually want it to do? Oh, cool. It needs to integrate with that. Cool. What API endpoints do you need? Okay, great. You know, can you consume this? Do you understand that? Great. But also from a pure enjoyment factor and intuitive use aspect, how's it going? When do you get the user experience grown-ups in the room, if you even have them, but who owns that piece? Because that's as important as anything. And that's what will, I think, determine how it's used. Because I know ourselves, we've released at least one particular product I can think of, which I don't think is particularly intuitive. It's a fantastic tool. It does everything it says it'll do on the box, but like I look at it and I just kind of glaze over a little bit. It's not.
It's complex.
Yeah. You think about the voice every billing thing? Because that's
what I'm thinking. Yeah, that came straight to my mind before you mentioned it. I said, you've got to have that supporting material to help people, you know, use the product. And that has to be ready at time of launch as well.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. Because if it's not intuitive, it has to be bloody well documented. And then you've still got to make sure the right people are getting exposed to that documentation, which isn't always as easy as it probably sounds. I think you basically nailed it. It's a response from marketing initiatives, analytics showing how the features are used, how often they're used, and by who. I think also repeat visitors is kind of important too. How often do they come back to use the feature? And it's kind of like the active users metric in social media, I suppose. It's the same thing. How often are those people coming back? Because what you want to see over time in those metrics is unique users lifting. And if people aren't coming back, it's going to be pretty, it's either going to decline or be flat at best.
I think the other thing there is, you know, if you're now capturing all this data, what are you doing with it? Like, making sure you actually feed that back to your development team and going, you know, we're seeing upticks of users on this period. Can you correlate stuff to that? You know, is there a sudden drop off? If there's a sudden drop off, can you tell your development team that? Because it could indicate, you know, someone screwed up and something is broken in that tool set. You know, so you got to be able to use the data that you're analyzing and gathering, and someone should be responsible for looking at that data regularly and reporting back on it.
Yeah, there's two things we don't do well yet that sort of tie into that. One is new feature guides, something new's coming to the platform. How do people know about that, and how do they get exposed to the documentation you mentioned earlier? If you have the whole kind of like, hey, looks like we've released something new since you last came here, want to know how to use it and what it does, and then go take them to a video or something. The other one is when something's not working as intended inside of whichever platform, whichever app or tool within your portfolio of products. I think it's important there's an easy way for the person in the moment to get access to people who can debug it, who can capture whatever data is required. Because I know, like, we've had some tricky ones where sometimes people couldn't even get access, like they couldn't log in. Now, it turns out that was a firewall issue. There's some stuff there. But if those people in that moment can't actually access someone who's actually useful, and it's not really a support desk thing, I can't access my Office 365 or my internet's not working. It's a different type of problem. They need to get through to people who can actually assess it in the moment. Otherwise, they're probably not going to come back. And that's something we probably don't do well at the moment as well, to be fair.
Well, that also ties in well with how do you tell your customers if you develop the product and it's perhaps a feature that's with a part of a bigger product, how do you tell your customer that, you know, this part of the product isn't operational right now, or there's something wrong with that? You know, if there's that one component missing, and that's, you know, again, we're probably pretty guilty of that. As we say, Illume, is it operating? Hey, or nay, but we don't go, that tool's not broken or is broken right now. So, you know, that's something we could probably do better as well.
We need to just sort of hope that the dev team aren't listening to this when it does come out, and they don't beat us up for us highlighting issues.
You know, this will be a good test to see if they are listening to our podcast.
Good call. And also, radical candor, guys. We care deeply and we just want us to all get ahead. So, all right. That said, I just got back from a holiday on an island, and it looks like, I don't know, Romain just threateningly picked up a book like he was about to hit me with it, but that's okay. Oh no, oh, the Radical Candle book. He's got it right there. Cool. That's what he was saying. Okay, I'm fine. Everything's okay. No, I just got back from an island where there was no internet for, I was there from Tuesday to Friday, so I guess 3 nights and better part of 4 days. And it was really interesting just how without, you know, Teams messages, emails, phone calls, whatever, how it streamlines your thinking and just kind of allows you to have much more of a dedicated focus. I ended up just sitting in a hammock listening to the ocean roll in, writing notes upon notes of where I thought the business should be hitting and what we should do, because I'm a nerd and I work when I'm on holiday, but what are you going to do? And then I got back and I was actually tagged by Romain and Jack on the same post. My mic just cut out there when you moved that. It was a guy who had, I couldn't tell you where he's from, what his job was, but he put up a post saying that every 2 months, I think it was, he books out 2 days in an Airbnb at least 2 hours drive away from where he lives. Basically just goes offline and just thinks strategically and just works on big picture stuff.
And there's a reporter in New Zealand that does that.
Really? Who's that?
Jehan Kisanada. He books himself a retreat.
Yeah,
I saw this the other day. It's a retreat. It's on a business day. Yep. There's a clear agenda. There's scheduled break times. There's scheduled exercise times. But it's fully there. It's got a set of outcomes that he wants to achieve from that. But he gets to work through it, and it's taking him away from the noise, from his daily, you know, hustle and bustle. Probably works from home, so great to get out of the house. Mm-hmm. But again, somewhere else, somewhere different mindset, different perspective. But he's there to achieve a goal.
Yep. That's good. It may have been the same post I saw. The key thing is, you know, I guess the question at the heart of this is, how do we get into that, you know, Jeff Bezos mindset where he's thinking 1 to 3 years ahead? And it's particularly hard to get into that mindset that is success. Answering those questions is success. And it's okay to not have a clear movement in progress week on week, because that's not your job anymore. And it's particularly hard, I think, for people who have come from an operational role that's, you know, like for me, I started off in business development. It's very clear then. You have daily goals, you have weekly goals, you have monthly, you have quarterly, and it's very clear whether or not you're hitting those. And they're easily measured, easily defined. Then if you, you know, if you're in marketing, you can look at, you know, customer acquisition costs, you can look at click-through rates, you can look at all sorts of stuff. But when you get into that strategic realm after that, and really you're looking to create opportunities and solve problems that are way over the horizon, how do you get comfortable with that change in your personal role's definition of success?
I can see it as well. Like, so it probably applies the whole way through your journey though, right? So if you used to be a technical person, and then you became a manager, you go from being less hands-on on the tools to, you know, managing people or projects or things like that. You know, I guess the same applies, but it's far more important that you get it right at that strategic level. I think for a lot of people, though, they do struggle to give up on that day-to-day operations. They, you know, they love to know what's going on. They love the hustle. They love the buzz. All that's going on there, and there's a huge amount of satisfaction that you get from seeing those like inch forward gains, or those kind of daily metrics ticking up, versus going, I'm going to do something in 3 years' time. I'm going to set the ball in motion. I won't know if it's a success for 3 years, and if you f*** it up, that's, you know, that's huge. That is huge.
It is. I think that's where.
Suck it up, Brendan.
Yeah, no pressure. But I think that's where. But I think that's where, you know, making sure that the strategic decisions that are made are not gut feel. They're data driven, they're insightful, they're based off a lot of analysis of market movements and macro and micro factors. But yeah, it was interesting actually though, because I was in this hammock drinking gin with the ocean lapping away on the reef in the distance. This is off the
low speedos.
I wasn't. I was so gutted. I brought them with me. I genuinely packed them, and I was going to be wearing the Lightweight branded Speedos, and then I was going to post something somewhere. I wasn't sure if LinkedIn was the right place. I thought that might get me fired, but certainly Instagram or something, and just say always on brand, even on holiday. That was going to be the tagline. And then I got home. I was unpacking. I was like, ah, damn it. I just totally miss that opportunity, but it won't be my last holiday. And I do live near a beach. When it's not raining, maybe it's another option. But the point was going to be not in Speedos, but where was I? That's right, drink. So I was drinking and in this hammock, ocean lapping away, trees overhead, beautiful setting. And I was thinking afterwards, it's like, I had quite a bit to drink actually. Is any of this going to hold up? Or was I just like a madman scribbling furiously, just incoherent ranting about, I don't know, growth, something, exclamation mark, underline. But I actually got back from holiday and I was surprised on reflection, typing into a Word doc and kind of making it just actually trying to decipher my own writing. Should have been a doctor. It held up. And so for me, even in the state I was in, it shows the value of just being disconnected, having a singular focus without interruption for a number of hours. I will say though, the writing did get worse to the point it was illegible on like page 4. So there is a timeline to these events.
Maybe you need a dictaphone with some live transcription. Kind of just ramble as you go and eventually pass out and fall asleep on the mat.
Challenge accepted. But I do, so bringing it back a touch, I think if we look at many CEOs or MDs or even GMs, I suppose, in MSPs that are sort of sub 100, often they hold on to the marketing element because they are potentially the face or the brand or the personality that people associate, you know, their business with. And that in itself sort of ties you to operational outcomes and drowns you in noise. Because if you are at the very least owning brand product PR as the owner or as the CEO or as the MD, there's timelines to a whole bunch of things. And there's a lot of questions from a lot of people about a lot of things. And there's people wanting to make sure that the brand guidelines are on point, that they're sticking to the persona of the business, that you're okay with whatever going out. So for as long as you hold on to that marketing piece, you can't really be purely strategic. But, you know, there's probably a scale element to that. If at some point you can have a GM of marketing, if you can have a CMO, then problem solved. But I do think there's a tricky point there somewhere probably between, you know, 50 and 200 staff where you've kind of got that. It's difficult to disconnect if that's the stream you've come through to get to that position.
There's probably a strong correlation there with, you know, if you're the face of a business, then a lot of those relationships are also bound to you. So at which point does the success of the business kind of flip so that it can sustain its growth and things, you know, without you, without that person being the face of it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And it's no coincidence that, you know, you own more things, Jackson more things, Cat's going to be in more things from our point of view, because, you know, a brand really can't be one person. It has to be more than that. It has to be a really strong group of people who are aligned in their thinking, aligned in their customer or client focus. And, you know, the business itself has such a clear growth plan and strategy behind it that everyone's bought into it and can essentially in perhaps not own all of it, but can contribute in many ways to build something more than the one person. So, yeah, the last thing I wanted to talk about other than just kind of bragging about that Wilson Island experience, by the way, totally recommend. Maximum of 12 people on an island, no internet, 3 people just there to look after you, chef, caretaker, sort of a client success, client service manager type person, snorkeling, beach, David's on the beach, basically never saw anyone else. Amazing. Open bar the whole time. No kids are allowed on the island. Just ticks a lot of boxes. Anywho, last thing I want to talk about before I throw to you and shut up for a little bit is one just theme that came out of that trip as well. We're kind of working in slightly uncertain times, I suppose. We don't quite know what inflation is doing. We don't quite know where interest rates are going, but certainly the cost of borrowing is going up. I think we can say that's just a known fact. So there's an imperative, I think, and certainly in our business, and I think this might apply for a lot of our partners and listeners, is that of leveraging in place of building. You know, partner, don't build. Where there's opportunities for your business to provide values to others through your unique point of difference, and where others are well positioned to fill gaps in your portfolio, it can often make a lot more sense to leverage those capabilities rather than building them afresh yourself. So I'm just very open at the moment to that as a way of thinking. because I think we have to change with the times. We have to be aware of the macro environment we're working within. And that was just something that's opened my eyes to a lot of opportunities and a lot of potentially interesting discussions. So I just wanted to share that. That was just something I walked away with.
Yeah, I mean, partnering, again, opens up so many different conversations that you can have with people and go, you know, just off the cuff of it, hey, we could build this really cool thing together. Like, you both service your own customers in your own unique way, but together you go, hey, we can service both our customers and make more money together and give the customer what they want and a better experience. I don't know, win-win. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Well, it's a theme. It's an idea, putting something concrete below it. That's the challenge. The other thing I do want to talk about as well, not to foreshadow too much, but I think it's really interesting to talk about how much the wider business or everyone within your business understands your revenue targets and your budgets and how they use that information to understand the requirements of their own role and where they fit within, you know, I guess the moving wheels that will create those outcomes. So I want to talk about that. It's really relevant to people in marketing, particularly when they're looking at sales targets. They need to understand what those are in order to sort of work backwards from there. But that'll be another conversation for a future episode. So since we're talking about the future and not the now, we should probably leave it there. So Nick, I'll leave you to it. Good luck with the recovery. Thanks for joining us. Sorry for being late. I was definitely late. I'm also still very wet. The weather here sucks. But yeah, that's it for another week. We'll leave it there. If anyone wants to get hold of Nick, find him on LinkedIn, Nick Phillips, 2 L's, Brendan Ritchie, RITCHIE at LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you again next week.